Ella wraps her arms around the trunk. She can feel its deep bark grating against her fingertips. Her skin, pressed against the tree's brown, is so white, it's almost glowing. There's a purple-blue smudge on her left hip from last week's fall, a pair of pink grazes beginning to crust across her kneecaps. Last week it was a wall, today it's a tree. They've tried stepladders, climbing frames, even a bridge. Seemingly, there's no end to the high things you can push your daughter off for her own good. Ella looks down and notes the springy green grass circling the tree's trunk. She's grateful for it. There's more give in lawn. Concrete is not so forgiving. A starling, rattled out of the tree's upper branches, goes sweeping past her face. Ah, Ella envies its easy flight. As she edges forward, she's careful to keep her elbows tucked in. She can't risk unfurling her wings. They're covered in a thin membrane, like skin, but easier torn, and she must avoid loose splinters. She eases out towards the branch's tip, feeling it bow under her weight, curling her feet around its thin curve. Beneath her naked toes, the branch teems with tiny creatures, woodlice, ants, microscopic mini-beasts. They're drawn to Ella and the power that leaks out of her every time she touches. She feels the tickle of them crushing against her skin. Oh, she could stay here for hours. She honestly could, but it's not what they want from her. More bones, he is incredulous. Using them to pick your teeth? Soup. You flip out your phone, thumbing open the lock screen, posing indifference. Farita. Give it over, you're smudging the counter, he snaps, hands on his hips. Make me, you reply, popping another small bubble. What kind of bones? Whatever you got. You don't take your eyes off your digital feed, but you aren't reading it. Not really. He loves it, your indifference getting right under his skin. He hisses and disappears behind the thick plastic curtains to get you what you're looking for. Good boy. You start to sing along with the radio while he's in there, loud enough given there's nobody else around. Oh, it feels like the stations have only been playing 4 songs this summer, all of them bangers. You sway side to side along with the chorus, raise your arms above your head, kick the sawdust. Beats easy, words dark, pay me what you owe me. You sort of lose yourself in it, synth overtaking your limbs a little. It's cold in here to keep the meat fresh. The hairs on your arms rise. Gus comes back holding a blue plastic bag weighed down with bones. They'll be wrapped in cling, then yesterday's paper. You smile at him, still dancing. Take a break? Ah, this is such a tune. He shakes his head. Christ, Bevan, give it up, would you? Stop yourself. You lean over the counter and he passes you the blue bag. It rustles. Never. Dance with me? You don't really mean it, or even want him to. You know he won't. But hot red discomfort climbs his face. He sets his teeth, exhales through his nose. Are you trying to be funny? You're not trying. You're hilarious. Suit yourself. You shrug, kicking up the sawdust at your heels like glitter as you leave the shop. The bell rings as the door opens and closes on the summer tune and the flustered boy lit up like a Christmas tree in June. You did that. Karen raised her collar and shivered, then turned to see what was keeping Lisa and Pat. Huddled together with their heads almost touching, they were trying to create a shelter from the wind that would let them light their communal cigarette. A post office van with its lights on full beam hurried past. Its exhaust, a smoker's throaty cough. The street's a wind tunnel, Lisa complained, as the lighter spluttered out again. Oh, what's the point? Karen asked, hunching her shoulders. Marty won't let you smoke in his taxi. He told me off last week for eating a packet of crisps. He's not here yet, is he? Lisa said, clicking a furious Morse code on the lighter. Oh, I think this is empty, and I need a fag. He's getting like an old woman about the taxi. He'll be putting up net curtains soon. Karen went and stood at the edge of the curb, looking for a sighting of their lift. At the side of the city hall, yellow-windowed buses were already pulling in and discharging their dark silhouettes. A council cleaning lorry with huge, circular, whirring brushes was scouring the opposite side of the road. On the front grill was pinned a bouquet of plastic daffodils. She let her toes move out over the curb's edge and held herself in balance. Here, one of those would get your work done pretty quick, Pat said, pointing with the still unlit cigarette at the vehicle. The driver waved his hand in greeting. Here you go, I think you've clicked, Karen said. It's freezing. Where's Marty? Should you phone and see where he is? Here he is, Lisa said, taking her cigarette from Pat and slipping it inside her pocket. The three women bunched up tightly at the side of the curb, as if waiting for rescue from a sinking ship, and then as the taxi stopped, they clambered in, with Karen in the front and the two others in the back. The car smelled of air freshener. Home, Marty, and don't spare the horses, Pat told him, snuggling into the seat. You going back to bed? He asked. Here, is that an offer? Lisa said. Because you're talking to the three musketeers, and what one gets, the rest has to get. The other two women laughed as they angled their heads to the grey wash of the city streets. I never mix business and pleasure, Marty answered. You should try it sometime, Lisa said, before asking if she could smoke. No, you can't. You know you can't,